The following interview was recorded for CFRO The Pulse, Vancouver Co-op Radio's daily news show. The Pulse airs Monday to Friday at 7 a.m. on 100.5 FM and streaming live at coopradio.org.
Welcome back. You're listening to The Pulse on CFRO, 100.5 FM, Vancouver Cooperative Radio. I'm David Ball. You can find all of our previous shows and interviews at thepulse.cooperadio.org or wherever you get your favorite podcasts. On today's show, we're talking to Alanis Obomsa. She's Abenaki First Nation Mohawk, and her latest film, Jordan River Anderson, The Messenger, is about Jordan, a child who was forced to die in the Canadian healthcare system because of disputes between provincial and federal jurisdiction, and what this means for Indigenous rights and self-determination. And the Royal Society of Canada named her an honorary fellow in 2013. She's also a member of the Canadian Film and Television Hall of Fame. We talked to Alanis in an in-depth conversation about the new film and what it means for families in the downtown East Side and beyond, as well as for missing and murdered Indigenous women and her guidance in their struggles after many years of seeking justice. First, here's a clip from the film Jordan River Anderson, The Messenger.
Here we are in Kinosauosipi, Norway House, Manitoba, a Cree community of 8,000 people, located more than 800 kilometers north of Winnipeg in Canada. This is where the Anderson family lives. When Virginia Anderson was pregnant with Jordan, she had complications and had to be flown to Winnipeg to give birth. This is why Jordan ended up so far away from home, in the children's hospital, where he lived for such a long time.
I think he really likes that, Marcy. He must get that from his dad.
Yeah.
The wrangling between the provincial and federal departments began because they could not decide which department would pay for what.
It was very disheartening and disillusioning that the two levels of government could not come to an agreement at that table of a payment for Jordan so he could leave the hospital. And he never did leave the hospital. He had actually gone into a coma, and he passed away in 2005. Jordan deserved the opportunity to live in a home.
Who's that? Oh. Who's there?
Look at those
fish. Christian, it's Christian.
Look at how Jordan's opening his mouth. You can open your mouth really wide.
If he had been a provincial child, same situation, if he had been deemed a provincial responsibility here in Manitoba, he would have been released, no questions asked, and the entire per diem would have been covered. But it was because of his Indian status, federal responsibility, that he never had that opportunity. I had raised the issue with a colleague of mine in Ottawa, Cindy Blackstock, and the profile was raised in regard to this injustice.
Cindy met with me and talked about Jordan River Anderson and about the plight of Aboriginal children across this country. And working with Cindy, we developed a motion to be presented in the House of Commons. So Cindy was really my first point of contact.
The question is the following one. Ms. Crowder, seconded by Ms. Wazalis-Silis, moved that in the opinion of the House, the government should immediately adopt a child-first principle based on Jordan's principle to resolve jurisdictional disputes involving the care of First Nations children.
Yes, pour 262, 262, nays contre aucun, none.
Je déclare la motion adoptée.
And that was Alanis Abomson. She is an award-winning documentary filmmaker with a National Film Board of Abenaki First Nation. You can find that film and its trailers at nfb.ca. Thank you so much for joining us here on Vancouver Co-op Radio. It's an honor to talk to you.
Thank you. My pleasure.
So I think a lot of our listeners would know you from one of your earlier films, Gunasatake, 270 Years of Resistance. You made a lot of great stuff since then. And your newest film, Jordan River Anderson, The Messenger, is out on National Film Board. I wanted to ask you about that film. How did you start making it? What made you decide to tell Jordan's story?
Well, I started a very long time before the film came out. I think in 2010, the first time that I did an interview concerning Jordan. And I went to James Bay, and I was working on another film there in Attawapiskat. And then Jordan was very much at the front in terms of rights for children that were indigenous and not having equal rights like all the other children in Canada, and I was very disturbed by that. And the first interview that I did with the father, I think, was 2011. So you can imagine, I've been at it a long time. I was working on other films at the same time, but always watching to see what was happening concerning Jordan's principle.
So you were working, I guess, at that time on the Kahtowapiskat River film, People of the Kahtowapiskat. It's sort of an underlying current, how we treat children. It seems like your films really capture more than just the subject of the film. I remember your rocks at Whiskey Trench film, and it really delved into, you know, white racism so deeply, just as Gunasatake delved into like women's leadership and self-determination so well.
Yes. And, you know, my main interest in life is really children and education. So I was, once again, you know, we had to really continue exposing this and fighting for change. So it was on, you know, for 10 years off and on with the court system also, with human rights. And so I watched everything. The last time we were shooting in the courtroom was when they were all agreeing on something. And I tell you, I was so happy to see everybody, nobody against, everybody for, and wanting to do the best for Jordan and the children. I thought, man, I wish I had long, long, long arms. I'd hug them all at once.
Oh, wow. Jordan's principle. We now have a law called Jordan's Principle, but could you tell our listeners a bit about who is Jordan River Anderson and how did this law come about?
Yes. Well, first of all, Jordan was born with many special needs, and when his mother was pregnant, she had to be transferred to Winnipeg. You know, she was in Norway House, and because there were complications, and she had her baby at the hospital there. And Jordan remained there all his life. He died at the age of 5. And when he was 2 years old, the doctors had said Jordan could go to a private home now, either to his home or to another place where people would help him, as long as he was close to a hospital. But then, at that time, the federal government and the provincial government were fighting. The province was saying, well, he's Indian, and the federal is responsible for Indians. They're the ones that should pay for the expenses for him to be transferred to a home. And then the federal was saying no, because he's in town, he's in Winnipeg, and it's the province that's responsible. And they were arguing and arguing. Anyway, by the time they were ready to do something, Jordan died. By then, he was 5 years old.
It's just terrible.
It is. And it was so sad and so unjust, you know, that a lot of people were trying to help making the change to make sure that other children will not go through that. And, you know, I just covered all those things, and it was so heartbreaking. And then at the end, Jordan became like a king, like he was this little baby who the people created such a fuss over him. And it was this case that really forced the changes. And this is why I called him the messenger.
The messenger.
Yes.
What do you see as the role, and what are some examples of the messenger in different indigenous struggles? Because I think of Jordan, I think of, you know, people like Ellen Gabriel in your nation. I think about, in Manitoba, the lone feather being raised to hold up the Meech Lake. It just seems like that is such a powerful image of resistance. And here's a child who's now part of that group.
Yes. Yes. And it's been a big battle for such a long time. But now it brought changes, real changes. You know, can you imagine, like, people... Indigenous people who had children with special needs could never get anywhere through Jordan's principle, although they were supposed to. And everybody that applied would never get anywhere until the changes came at the Human Rights Court there. And then they start counting... thousands of children getting help. Can you imagine? It happened almost overnight all of a sudden. And I think Canadians in general were very interested in this case and really wanted to see justice done. That's another big help that we have, that it has changed in the last 5-10 years. So... everybody loves Jordan. It's just a beautiful baby that never had a chance to even go to a home, you know?
And so now, under the principle named after him, the child's welfare comes first, not jurisdictional disputes between Canada and a province. But First Nations children are still the subject of this human rights tribunal battle, and are actually, under using Jordan's principle, are going back in October, I understand, to the Human Rights Tribunal. So Canada has changed one thing, but it seems like there's still unequal funding and unequal treatment of children.
Still unequal. They fight for, they were supposed to be giving money to the children that died there in residential school. And people, that children that have died, that could not tell through Jordan's principle all those years. And they're supposed to give money to all the families that went through that. So they're fighting, they're delaying the time and slow, you know, they say that they will. And so we just have to stay on our feet and fight to the end. It's happening. You know, we might say it's slow, but it is happening. And what interests me more of all this is the people of Canada, Canadians, how much concern they have now, and how much they want to hear and following through. This is very new in the last few years. So it's very encouraging, because the strongest word is really the population. And when people start, really, if people believe in something, in big amount of people, that creates changes, because the politicians don't like to get that kind of mail.
It's hard to argue with people who are acting on behalf of children. There's no complicated politics there that often surface when people say, oh, we should get clean water to reserves. And then someone says, well, it's the local management, or it's training, or it's remoteness. There's always an argument. And this is a case where it's children. It shouldn't be this way. I wanted to ask you, you know, there's lots of powerful moments in your film, but I wondered if there's one interview or one scene that really hit you the hardest as you made it.
The hardest, I guess it's in the hospital. To see You see, again, I keep saying there's good people everywhere. This often, when things go wrong, you don't see the good. You only think of the bad. So going to the hospital, all these nurses were so good to Jordan. They really took good care of him and tried to make the place looking like a home. And there was a lot of effort given by total strangers to Jordan, which really touched me no end. Because can you imagine being in a hospital for 5 years, never going to a home, not knowing what it is to have to be with your parents and all that.
Wow.
And it was very difficult. Like the mother, she was torn. You know, she had a lot of children, and she would leave Norway House and go and stay in Winnipeg so she could see Jordan. She didn't like the feeling that he was alone in Winnipeg as a child, not having his relations. So that also created a lot of pain and injustice towards the other children at home who really were in need of the mother who was in Winnipeg. That also created a lot of heartache in the family because some of the children, one was 2, 4, and 6, you know, you need your parents so much at that age. So all that was a tragedy. And I found that when I was talking to them, very, very, very hard to hear and feel what it was like. You know, that was really very sad.
One thing that I find about your films, Alanis, that is so powerful is you talk about victories. And you do it through the saddest stories sometimes, or the most difficult times or conflicts. But I think about Hi Ho Mistahi, about another child who was a messenger, Shannon's dream. Even going back to Ganasatake, 270 years. These are stories of winning. What is that important to you?
Well, it's very important. If you believe in something and it's honest and you go into your heart and you believe in it so much, I tell you, when you love your people that much, you can move mountains.
Next week actually marks the part of the Ganasatake conflict when Canada sent in the troops in 1990. So we're looking at, I guess, the 20th, 30th anniversary now coming up in August and September. I guess last month was the start of it. What do you take from that time that you've carried with you as a filmmaker and as an educator ever since?
Well, I made 4 films there. And it was very difficult in every aspect and of making film, I should say, and the subject and the racism around and the put down I received because of making those films. It was very, very difficult time for quite a long time. So some of the reasons for making that stand is still there. You know, it's still not resolved. But it was very important that these stories be told as they were happening, and I documented pretty much everything that was going on there. And for me, that's history, and it's very important that it's out there for other people to learn, especially through the educational system, so that they know exactly what happened and what it was like, you know. But it was hell making those films. But I'm so glad I did, because the people who lie about these things and try to say it's another story, well, you have the proof right there, you know?
And now you do a lot of education, and you're really working on nation building through your art and also through your work. In the last 30 years, what's the biggest thing you've learned?
In the last 30 years, the biggest thing I've learned? Well, I think it's the same. It's the belief in yourself, knowing what's right and wrong. And when you see something wrong, you have to speak up. You have to do something, not just not caring and not paying attention. And I know, and I learned, and I knew it, and I learned it more and more, that everything is possible. don't come and tell me this is impossible because you got a warrior right here who's going to prove you otherwise. That's me.
Do you have, my last question for you is, do you have any advice or guidance or wisdom for our listeners, many of whom are in the downtown east side in Vancouver, are advocates for missing and murdered Indigenous women or for land and water rights? What would you tell people that, that can guide them forward?
Yeah, I think anyone who know that this is unjust, that this is ugly and it shouldn't be, because you are Indigenous people or people of other colors that are looked down upon, stand up and say it. Don't be afraid. Because when you're afraid or you don't want to be bothered, you do nothing. And I don't know how you can sleep like that. You know, when you know that children are disadvantaged, that other people are made to feel they don't belong, that they're ugly, that they're dirty. You cannot allow this, you know. People have gone through that for so many generations. And now more and more, it's less than acceptable, but people fight back. Because life, everyone has life. And life is precious. And it's very, very important that people recognize and respect life. People that are living on the street, that are in poverty and are in misery for all kinds of reasons, and other people who pass by and look at them as if there's dirt under their feet, is very wrong. No matter how bad that looks, no matter how difficult it is for a person that don't have even a home to live in, you don't look down on it. This person has life, don't forget. And life is sacred, and you have to respect it. I don't care who it is or what's happening. You can badly treat somebody just by looking at this person in a way, meaning, why don't you drop dead or get away from me? So that is a sin. You know, if you want to talk about religion, if you don't have in a good feeling in your heart for life, anybody's life, everybody's life, then there's something wrong with you. That's a sickness that is like a cancer. And that cancer you can't cure because it drives people crazy and it makes them feel that they don't exist, that they should disappear. Anybody who does that to anyone else, I feel sorry for that person.
Well, I really wanted to thank you for so much of your time and also for your new film, Jordan River Anderson, The Messenger. And the tagline, the slogan is justice is possible. So thank you also for showing us what is possible.
Thank you.
Wonderful to talk to you today. Stay healthy.
Okay, bye.
CFRO The Pulse is brought to you by the Local Journalism Initiative, a program funded by Heritage Canada and administered through the Community Radio Fund of Canada.